NRI Wellness. We bring you the latest in health and nutrition information, create customized nutrition programs, and walk you through the process to ensure your success.
Good morning, good evening, good night, wherever you are in the world. And thank you for tuning in to another wonderful episode of the 10 Dimensions of Wellness. I am your host, Cammie Redd, the owner of NRI Wellness. And yet again, we have another dynamic show and another dynamic guest. I am super excited to be talking to the author of Pushing Through, Nicole Vick. So Nicole is going to just intro herself because she has a vast history. She's not just an author. Now, she has a history in public health as well. So don't think for a minute this doesn't all tie into wellness. So Nicole is going to introduce herself. She's going to tell us all about her. She's going to tell us about her journey to wellness. So Nicole, I'm going to let you take it from here, and the show is yours.
All right, Cammie, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for handing over the mic. I'm ready to go. As you said, my name is Nicole, and I am a public health professional. I'm an educator, and I'm a fashionista, a mom. And I think most importantly, I have my own journey to wellness, as you've talked about. And even in our conversation before we got on air, we were talking about things like food and access to healthy things. And one of the things that I have been doing for the last 15 years is working in public health. And a lot of people don't know what public health is. Now, they might know now what public health is because of COVID-19 and seeing the CDC.
Yes, yes.
And, and here in LA County, I'm in Los Angeles, seeing Dr. Ferrer, our director of public health. So we kind of starting to understand what public health is. But, you know, as I was thinking of our interview and anticipating speaking to you today, I really wanted to talk about that connection between public health, social justice, and wellness. I think people think that, you know, they're all separate, but they all are connected. And one of the things that really is so important to me as a public health professional is this idea of social justice, that everyone deserves the same opportunity to live their best life, their healthiest life, to be able to achieve wellness. The issue with that, though, is that there are people in our country, in our neighborhoods, that are surviving. They are not thriving. They are focused on survival. They can't think about wellness. They're thinking about, where's the rent coming? How am I going to pay for rent? How am I going to, you know, homeschool this kid now that usually is in school, but now they're at home? How am I going to get food on the table? And so sometimes these conversations, I think, around wellness leave out an entire segment of our population that actually would benefit the most from some of those principles that are really important to wellness, right?
Yes, girl, you just, you know? I'm over here. If I had a tambourine, we'd be in church right now. So I'm over here. I'm amening and just shaking like, oh, you preaching to the choir.
Right? And it's so true, you know, and I found myself when I started public health 15 years ago, you know, they were always talking about, we have to teach people to drink water instead of soda and to not eat junk food and to eat
but
better.
But it's so much more than that, than just it's teaching
so,
that.
Yeah, it's so much more than that. But then at the very basic level, wait a minute. What are we telling these people to do when ain't none of those resources are in the neighborhood?
Yes.
We're telling people to do better with what?
Like, you got to, if you're going to tell people to do better, you got to be able to provide solutions and resources that go behind it. And when I say you, that's actually the conversation that we had before we got on the air is exactly what we were talking about, is providing resources in those areas to actually help people instead of just preaching do better, actually giving them the tools and the equipment and the know-how to do better, not just with, you know, food, but with farming, everything, you know, economics, all of that stuff.
Everything.
That's all a part of wellness.
Absolutely. And I think where public health kind of intersects with that wellness conversation is, how do we create a society that will provide those types of resources to those communities? And so if we want to even go a little deeper than that, because we can, I don't know how deep you want to go. We can go a little deeper than that.
Girl, go as deep as you want to. Look, I'm diving in this pool with you, okay?
You do know that these communities and folks that don't have access, that this lack of access is not an accident. That this wasn't this thing that just coincidentally happened.
I need you to join our 10 Dimensions of Wellness group on Facebook. See, one of our other guests, Dr. Gail Hamilton, has let us know that this is all by design.
Absolutely.
So even, you know, as much as, you know, we're talking, all of my guests have recognized the systemic racism that goes on. We're not just talking about police brutality and those things. We're talking about across the board in the medical industry, in the healthcare field, in groceries, in stores, and what is actually put in the grocery stores in our neighborhood, down to those items. So when you talk about it's by design, it is. So I'm often telling my clients that they were told that high blood pressure and diabetes are genetic diseases, but they aren't told that you can actually reverse those things in your body if you're given the right and proper diet or given the right information to help you navigate yourself through this holistically. Often we're just treated with supplements and medicines and told to go on our way. Some of the times the medicines are not even the right things for us. And I did not mean to hijack your speech.
No, but you're right. And I think the other part of that is the impact of stress, the impact of our environment. And not even just the environment, meaning pollution. I'm talking about where we live. People don't really realize that your zip code, unfortunately, can dictate and determine your life expectancy. We can look, even in LA County where I live, we can look at geographic areas and say, if you're born in Compton, your life expectancy can be 10 to 15 years less than someone that's born in the Valley. And it has to do with, again, those access to resources, the amount of stress is so different and how stress can play out. You talked about high blood pressure. I mean, it is stressful to be poor in this country. It is stressful to be Black, you know, if we're going to be frank.
Let's be honest. It's stressful to be like, I don't think people understand waking up every morning as a Black woman in America with a Black son who is over the age of 18. That is stress within itself. Like, I wake up in fear. My son gets off of work at 1 o'clock in the morning. I am awake from the time he gets off work, from the time to the time he gets home. That's stress on my body because I have to turn around and wake up 2 hours later to start my day. So I'm right there with you. And I'm giving you guys examples of what Nicole is actually talking about so that you can understand that these things that she's saying are actually real. And it's not just in certain areas. This is all over.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I guess all of that to say, that's kind of where I come from as far as my frame of mind, my basis, my understanding of the work that I've been doing for the last 15 years. It has led me to think very differently about my community. It actually frames how I teach because I'm a college professor. I'm an adjunct professor. And I bring all of that stuff into the classroom because it's like, I can't teach you public health without talking about race, racism, class, privilege, power. We have to have those conversations because the impact of all of those things really bears out in people's health, their health outcomes, their life expectancy. You know, for example, educational attainment. The more years of school you have, the longer you live. And that's not just anecdotal. Like, they've done studies over time with all these people. Yes, if you have a college degree, you live longer than someone with a high school education. And why is that in this country, in the United States of America, that why does that happen that way? And how can we, you know, change things when there are communities in this country where our schools are so underfunded that nobody wants. I wouldn't want to sit in that school. So it's just really an interesting thing that a lot of stuff that impacts the health of our communities has actually nothing to do with health. We're talking about housing, housing discrimination. Why is housing segregated in certain communities? Most of us can quickly name in our own neighborhoods, this street is the dividing line between the rich and the poor. Why is that? It's not an accident.
I'm from Atlanta, born and raised in the city. I when I say in the city, I literally mean in the city of Atlanta. And I can tell you the dividing line between what we would consider North Atlanta and South Atlanta. And the crazy part about it is I got to experience both sides of the world, because during my education, or when I was being educated early on, we were bused from South Atlanta to North Atlanta to go to school in what would be considered the more to do, the more educated, the richer part of town. So yeah, in each city, there is a divided line of rich and poor.
Yeah.
And you can actually tell. What's crazy is you can look at the people on each side of that line and you can see their stress levels. Meaning you can tell that the people that are on this side of that line, their stress is higher. The people who are poor, the African American population that is strictly in this area is extremely stressed. They're higher, all of that stuff. Their health, they have more health issues. Whereas if you look at over on this side of the line, their whole demeanor is different. They're doing yoga, they're calmer. Right. Life is different for them.
Absolutely. And so, you know, again, how do we have a conversation about wellness in those kinds of communities where people are literally trying to survive? And I think that's one of the things that I think a lot about, because there's so much that needs to be done to change the system and the structures in our country, especially because I'm in South Central Los Angeles. I live four blocks away from where Nipsey Hussle was killed. Like, his store is like down the street. And so I'm in the middle of the neighborhood.
Wow, sis, that's extremely powerful for you to say that, because, you know, for those of you who don't know, it's been very hard to draw that line in Compton, because in that area, in Inglewood, the people in there are actually trying to improve that area and make that area better. So, you know, I get exactly what you're saying. Like, I can see you guys doing the work in that area to make economic situations equal to that of other areas, so that wellness is equal to that of other areas. That's a powerful place to be right there.
Right. And it's something that has to happen, because we want to get people away from merely surviving. We want them to thrive. We want them to take yoga. I want to go take yoga too, you know, and all that to say that there are people in our communities that are doing the work. So I'm not going to say that nobody's doing yoga in South Central. Listen, there are people that are doing
I'm actually in school right now to be a certified yoga teacher myself. Mm-hmm. And I was over 1,000 other Black male and females, because we were given the opportunity on a scholarship to take the opportunity to become Yoga Alliance certified as a yoga teacher, to go back and be able to teach yoga in our communities. Not only did I get that scholarship, but I got another scholarship from a kids company called Pretzel Kids. And that's a yoga company as well. They gave me a scholarship because I wrote a paper stating how I'd like to use yoga to help young Black men, young African American boys, manage their stress and their anger level based upon, you know, those principles and techniques in our neighborhoods. So they are now recognizing that we are trying to be out here in our communities to also develop our communities in a wellness way as well, and show them some of these things so that they can live better too. So yeah, I'm like you said, we Yeah, we can miss yoga. Look, come back to our community, teach this to our communities as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, that's pretty much kind of where I'm come from. I'm a long time, lifelong resident of South Central Los Angeles. I can trace my history back here to my great grandparents from the 1930s. So I, you know, we here and love this community. And I really am really a strong advocate for public health and social justice. Like, we need to create a society where everybody has the opportunity to live their best life. And right now, you know, the truth of the matter is, there are people that are getting left out of that conversation. And how do we bring that the focus back to those folks so that everybody can thrive and we're not just over here surviving and struggling? Because it's not fair and it's not right.
No, Nicole, how did you get to this point? Like, what brought you to this point to where you said, you know what, enough is enough?
You know, it's probably a mini path that got me to where I am. I will say, in one respect, I believe that it's in my blood. My grandfather, for example, was a firefighter back from 1945 to he retired the year I was born. And I actually went to the African American Firefighter Museum here in Los Angeles and walked in because I had never been before. Walked in and I'm like, Why is my grandpa on the wall in this museum? And the curator said, your grandfather integrated the fire station at LAX. It was all white and he was the first black firefighter there. So I'm sitting here like, okay, this is telling me that, you know, I kind of have this desire to serve the public and to be a public servant in my blood. My aunt for many years was a commissioner and advocated for people with disabilities. So I just think that desire to help people was always there. And I got into public health specifically while I was in college. I was a teen mom. I was at a USC, a predominantly white school, my little black pregnant self walking across campus, wondering how I got here and why am I here and feeling very much different from everyone else. And I needed a job. You know, I was scooping, making smoothies and ice cream sundaes on campus, but I'm like, I need a job. And so I applied to this job at the health department, answering the sexually transmitted disease hotline and talking to people and giving them information and resources. And I was working with a group of health educators, and I thought they were the coolest people ever. So I think that's where it started, where I was like, oh, I want to do what they're doing. I want to help people. And that's where the love for public health started. That was about 20 years ago.
So, Nicole, tell me, what are some of the biggest challenges that you faced in wellness or in wellness with others and how you've overcome those?
So that's a big question. And I think I can answer it in kind of two ways, right? So there's my own personal wellness journey. And then there's the journey of wellness that I kind of see in my community. And in some ways, they actually overlap a little bit. I guess I'll start with myself. Why not, right? I think my biggest struggle was the journey to body positivity. I grew up, I was a chubby little girl. And I knew early on that I wasn't like everyone else. I was different. And I remember also my mother, I had to be in elementary school, giving me Slim Fast as a child.
Are you serious?
Yes. I remember strawberry flavored Slim Fast. And she would make me put a raw egg in it for added protein. And I really think, and not to fault my mother, I think she thought that was the best thing for me to try to help me lose weight as a child. Now, we of course know the science now, you don't have children lose weight, you have them grow into their weight. You kind of help them stabilize their weight as they grow. You don't put them on a diet. But during that time, you know, again, I was overweight and she wanted to kind of help me out. And I guess that's her way of trying to help me out. You know, I just struggled. I remember getting to about college age, and once again she paid for me to go to a weight loss I went to Lindora and did the Lindora program and lost about 80 something pounds. And I thought I was cute, honey, because I went from like a size 16 to a size 4. You couldn't tell me nothing. I was walking around in my early 20s, you know, just, hey. And the issue with that, though, that at least for me, and everybody's different, everybody's body's different, everybody has a different response to food and all these other things. But for me, it became an issue where I had to fight myself to stay a certain weight, where I had to keep dieting. I was doing Lindora. And then once I got off Lindora, I was doing my little homemade Lindora that I made up. And then when that stopped working and I started gaining weight, I went to Weight Watchers. And then I was doing that, and then that stopped working. And so I was just in this constant fight with myself. And I can remember one specific day where I had an electric scale. Got on that scale, and baby, that number was wrong. I said, what's wrong with this thing? This thing got to be broke. This number ain't right. This ain't saying what I want to say. My attitude is wrong. I threw that scale in the trash. You know?
You said the scale was not calibrated correctly.
Come on now, scale. Took the batteries out, put the batteries back in. I'm like, this ain't right. So, you know, it just got to a point where I said, you know, enough is enough. I need to respect my body for what it is and treat it with care. And this is not it. This cycle of restricting food and doing all this weird, you know, this is not healthy. And so I just kind of let go and said, look, my body is going to do what it's going to do. Yes, I should sleep and drink water and eat fruits and vegetables and exercise, but we can't be doing this. Okay, I'm not eating no carbs, protein only, ketosis and all this other stuff. I can't be doing this to myself anymore.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. Right?
And then I realized that I should be grateful for what my body can do. Do you know, in 2012, I rode my bicycle from San Francisco to Los Angeles.
Girl, stop playing.
Yes. Okay.
And okay. Congratulations for doing that. Okay.
And I ain't gonna never do it again. But I did it, right?
Look, you did it. You did it. That's all that matters. You did it at one time. So you can say you did it. Look, exactly. I congratulated you for doing that, and I ain't even did it. So that's good for you, okay?
Exactly. And so I think we just have to realize, look, I have to start where I am with what I have and make the best of it and stop trying to fight. I think, I hear women still to this day wanting to fight themselves. I wish I was this way. Baby, love your body for what it is today. If you want to change it, that's fine, but you ain't got to be going through all of this other stuff to be trying to make yourself look a certain way. I actually went, I had liposuction, paid $10,000 because I was so unhappy with my body. Why? I could have started a business with $10,000. I could have bought a house with $10,000, you know?
I try to teach to my patients is we don't focus on weight loss. We focus on being healthy. If you focus on weight loss, you'll always lose that battle because that's not where your focus should be. Your focus should be on getting and maintaining your health so that you are able to live a long thriving life, not just surviving, like you said earlier. You want to thrive. You want to be able to ride your bike from San Francisco to Los Angeles or do whatever it is, like run a marathon, even if it's just that one time, just to say that you did it. So those things right there are important. You focus on weight loss because the goal is basically.
Yeah. Health is definitely really important. And I think you're right. I think when we take the focus off of weight loss, it opens up a bigger window of opportunity. And it takes a lot of that, you know, weight off of our shoulders, I guess, so to speak. Like, you know, oh, now I can relax. And now I can focus on other things. And yeah, I can go take a walk in the morning. And that's okay. I don't have to, you know, eat a soup and a piece of celery and that's it. Like all these weird, you know, it causes you to eat in a funny way. Your eating becomes disordered and that's not a really good thing.
That is not a good thing, no.
That was a big journey for me for sure, to wellness and to finally be able to let go of that ideal that I thought that I needed to meet. and just say, look, this is who I am. This is the body that I'm in. I'm going to love it. And if I want to change it, it's okay, but I don't have to force it. That's big. That's big. That was a big journey for me.
That's really huge. That's actually really good. What's some common myths that you often hear? And I guess not even for you, but in our community, what, when you're talking about the challenges that we face in our community, one of the things that I know I, in fact, have a problem with is dispelling a lot of these myths around wellness and healthcare. What are some common things that you run?
I often hear a lot that Black people don't like vegetables, or Black people don't want to be healthy. And I'm like, no, we actually do like vegetables and we actually do like to be healthy.
I was going to say, we eat a lot of vegetables, believe it or not. I remember growing, and I grew up in the South, so it's a little bit different than the West. But I remember my grandmother, she would make one protein, two vegetables, and two starches with each meal. So we do eat vegetables. We actually eat vegetables a lot, because for us, meat has always been a high-priced item. Yep. And having access to vegetables was always cheaper and easier, because we grew those things in our yards, or we could get them from our local, you know, the gardeners in our area. So vegetables was always a staple on our plates, in our diets. Yeah.
Exactly. I think the other thing, you know, I'm vegan, so I often, you know, what? You vegan, you Black, like, what you do? What's wrong? What's wrong with you? And I'm like, nothing, I'm fine. I am just fine eating my kale and my roasted broccoli and everything. So I think often the biggest myth is, again, that Black people specifically are unhealthy and don't know how to be healthy, when, as we just talked about, we actually do know what we need to do. And it's actually, the bigger issue is the societal stress, the stress from being Black in America, that really is what's causing us to be sick more so than anything else. And so I think that the myth of, oh, we don't care about our health, and it is evident by the high rates of diabetes, high rates of hypertension, high rates of sexually transmitted disease. It's like, that's not really, that doesn't mean that we don't care about our health. It just means that we live in a society that doesn't care about us. And that's why our health is poor.
That is a fact right there. If I ain't never heard another fact of anything else, that was the biggest fact of them all. Okay. Like, we live in a world that does not care about us. Let me ask you this. What's been the biggest failure in this last year that you have seen? And why do you think that that has happened?
Oh my goodness.
That was a long question, first of all, okay? So I'm going to let you narrow down, because there have been quite a few failures. We can talk about social, we can talk about health-wise, but I'm going to let you pick one. Maybe you want to pick one in between both wellness and healthcare, or social injustice, but I'm going to let you decide what the biggest are you seeing in this last year, and why you think it is that?
Oh, that's a. I mean, I'm sitting here like, it's so many failures.
Let me just say this, y'all know this isn't a video interview, but I'm actually on video with Nicole, and I promise you, when I say, you can see her literally thinking, and it's so much stuff that's going through her mind right now. Like, you can see all the little popping out for her right now. So I'm gonna let you just, you start at one and move into the other one, and you just tell me what you think and what's coming through your head.
I think immediately, of course, the COVID-19 response was a huge failure, and it really opened up the door for us to see the other holes in our society. So when this pandemic hit, and I'll say this, it hit LA County in January, end of January of this year. We had our first case, and it was like, uh-oh. And at the time, it was kind of like, well, it's only one case. It's only, you know, people that traveled to that one place in China. We're okay. It's okay. No problem. You have the president like, oh, it's okay. It's going to go away. It'll be fine. that I think was one of the biggest failures in the last year, because we could have turned the tide on that entire pandemic in this country if things had been done well. And then
I think we missed the cue when we should have been doing, when we should have been fighting. We were prolonging and procrastinating, saying everything is going to be okay. It's going to be okay. But we were not taking cues from other countries that had seen this, knowing that we were about to have, I honestly think that we knew there was about to be an outbreak here.
Yeah.
I think we knew it. I think they saw it coming, and I think we were prepared for it.
So here's the thing. We prepare for this kind of stuff. Now, even from my perspective and my limited experience in my 15 years of work, we plan for public health emergencies. That's what you're supposed to do.
And I'm under the, now that's supposed to happen. So I'm going to ask you, Nicole, what happened?
Well, you know, there's a person in the White House right now. He doesn't really, I don't think he understands science, for one. And I think that's not even the bad part, because you cannot understand it. The important part is, even if you don't get it, you trust the person that gets it. So if I don't understand rocket science, but I know I'm supposed to make a decision, I'm going to trust the person that I know is the expert on rocket science, and I'm going to take their word for it. That's where the thing, everything messed up, because people were saying, this is going to, it's coming. It's going to happen. This is going to happen. We need to prepare for this. We need to be ready. And for some reason, people weren't listening. And then when it got here, people were still downplaying it. And then people started to die. And it's like, these are citizens. These are residents of the United States dying from something that we could have prevented. And I think, again, going back to my point, the whole premise of public health is prevention. And we often practice and say, what would happen if we get a global pandemic? What should we do? And we think through these things, not even just at the local county level, the CDC, all these folks are think through these things. And I just don't understand why no one listened and why it was so downplayed, you know, at the expense of people's health and people's lives.
So we I can officially say in 2020, we lost credibility in the CDC. So, you know, like, because of what you just said, the CDC was a trusted source of public health information for as long as I can remember. And I've been around for 40 years on this earth.
Yep.
So I can only imagine, I'm sure they've been around longer than I have. So for me, if you lose a trusted source like that, because now we can't believe anything that is being funneled down to us. We don't, like, literally, I posted on my Facebook page how now I can't even quote the CDC on something as small as health, heart failure or heart disease in women. I cannot use the CDC as a trusted source anymore because their credibility was shot to hell in 2020.
Yeah. And it's really sad because it's not even necessarily the CDC's fault. And I will say this, we experienced that too in my experience working in public health. There is distrust even before this, right? People are like, well, what is your intent? And so we already have that as a barrier to try to get people to understand what's happening, trying to get them to follow, you know, the recommendations, please wear a mask, you know, stay inside. And people are already distrustful. Like, why? This is fake. We don't believe it. And it's like, but there's literally people dying.
Well, see, I never understood that concept of people saying this was fake, especially because it's not just, you know, like, it's not a targeted group of people that's dying. This is people dying across the board. It doesn't matter your color. It doesn't matter your class. It doesn't matter your education. We've had actors die from it. I believe there were athletes that passed from it. There were kids that passed from it. Black, white, Asian, Hispanic. There have been deaths in every sector that you can think of. So you can't just say this is a one class thing. This is across the board. Everybody needs to be on high alert and be concerned about your health and the health of others. Do you think people are more selfish nowadays in their thinking, or do you think that's because of leadership?
No, I think that's American culture. And I had a conversation with another woman, and she said, I don't understand why people can't think of others, you know, besides themselves. I said, the American society was founded on individuality. So why are we having this great expectation for our citizens and our residents that just doesn't exist? Our country is not founded on community and working together. Our country is founded on individualism.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, which is why we actually face a lot of the problems that we face in this country right now. Right. Other countries are shutting their borders to us, and they're actually, you know, saying Americans, if you listen to it, people think that Americans are spoiled kids, that we are selfish, that we are disrespectful, that we don't respect other anything. They literally refer to us as spoiled. So, yeah. You know, how do we get around these types of, I guess, labels? Like, we're really digging ourselves into a hole here. What do we do health-wise? Like, how do we get to the point where we build up a system? And I'm only asking this in theory, in general to you, right? Because you do work in the public health sector, and you probably see a lot more than what we are privy to. So you would be able to give us a little bit more information on how do we change what just happened? How do we move forward in a way to change that?
It's an interesting thing because, you know, one thing I always say, well, maybe this example will teach us to be different. Maybe us all going through this pandemic collectively will shift our thinking. And the reality is, at least from my perspective, maybe I'm a pessimist, but I'm like, no, we'll talk about it for a few months. And then once COVID goes away, we'll forget about it like it was never here. And we'll go right back to the way we were. But I think that I'm hoping that we will start to see some long-term shifts and sort of a reconnection with community because of the fact that we can't go outside. And so
I was gonna say, do you ever think we're gonna go back to the way we were? There are gonna be some stipulations around some things. How do you, like, we're never going to go back to normal, so to speak.
Yeah, I don't think we will. I think the masks will be the norm for us. I mean, we may be able to relax a lot of that over time, but I mean, I think we're going to have to get used to a new normal, a new way of doing things. And I'm hoping that we will be able to get better at looking out for each other and being, you know, looking out for our neighbors. But I mean, even with the political climate, we have such polarizing views. We have folks on one side and folks on the other side, and nobody wants to kind of meet in the middle. And so it's like, we can't even agree on people's basic civil rights in this country. And so how can we agree that we should all wear masks to protect our neighbor? It's crazy. It's mind-boggling. Uh-oh.
Okay, there we go. I'm actually going to stop us right there.
If you want to be seen, you have to stop being invisible to opportunity. I'm Kay Henry, licensed mental health counselor and host of Black Therapy Uncensored. Your prescription to positivity starts here.
This is a 2-second nutrition tip. Today's tip is, take stock of your refrigerator and pantry. In addition to throwing out or maybe donating everything that's past due or older than 6 months, challenge yourself to throw out all items that are less than nutritious. Replace every non-healthy item you discard with something new, fresh, and heart healthy. Let me know how it goes. This has been a 2-second nutrition tip.
NRI Wellness brings you the latest health and nutrition information, creates customized nutrition programs, and walks you through the process to ensure your success.
So, Nicole, tell us about Pushing Through. Now, this is your latest book project. What motivated you to write this book, and what is it about?
Two things. So there were two key moments that really pushed me to write this book. The first, I think around the time that I started writing the book, I was 40. So I felt like 40 was a good age to stop and look back. Like, how did I get where I am right now? So that was the first thing that kind of got me there. The second thing, I was at work and I was in a racial equity training. And it was about 100 people in the room. We were in an auditorium facing the front of a, you know, of a room, and the facilitators in the front. And there's a slide that all of a sudden kind of pops up on the screen, and it says, roughly, it says Blacks fare worse in every single system in society. And it had like education, criminal justice, housing, like we're overrepresented in the homeless population. So there's all these different measures that it kind of talks about. And it wasn't new information to me. That wasn't the first time I had ever heard that. I know it. I know the data. I work in public health. I see it. But for some reason, it hit different in that moment. I'm like, you know what? I'm angry and I'm sad at the same time. And you know how when you're Black, you're sitting in a room and you're looking around, you're looking for your cousin, you know, your
work. Yeah, you're looking for the person that looked like you.
So I look over to one of my friends, and he's a great friend of mine. His name is Dante. He works in HIV AIDS work, outreach work. And so I kind of look at him, you know that look we give each other like, woo, this is too much.
Like this you're ready to be a mess in here real soon, real quick, real fast.
Too much. And it really forced me to think about this duality that I sit in. And I talk about this a lot in the book, and I talk about it a lot just in general, this sort of intersection between poverty and privilege, this benefit of understanding the data from this academic level, but then the burden of being one of them Black people you're talking about. That chart was talking about me. It's talking about my mama, my family, the neighborhood. And so I went right back to my desk. You know how we do that. That's part two, right? We go right back to the desk and send an email out to your friends, your work friends, like, girl, did you see that slide? And so we're talking about what we had seen. And one of my friends, her name is Tiffany, she said, you know what? She said, the issue is when they see numbers, we see people, we see faces. So you're looking at this and everybody else is looking at this PowerPoint slide and they're looking at data and numbers. You look at that slide and you
and we seeing our brother, our cousin, our sister, our auntie, our grandmama. We seeing the trauma that has been inflicted on us for years and generations. And we know why we fare low in all of those categories because we live this life every day. So you only seeing numbers, whereas I'm feeling this.
Exactly. And so I think that was also the point where I said, I have to sit down and write out how my life has, you know, from the time I was little until now, how public health and social justice issues have impacted my life, and also talk about how I was able to build community where I stand. Because I think that a lot of people think you have to be rich or you have to be, you know, extra smart or a celebrity to create change. And you don't have to. You can create change where you stand. And so the book is really about my life and public health and the observations I've had over time, the struggles I've had, but then also it is a little bit of, hey, you guys, here's some things that you can do to make your community better. You don't have to wait for somebody to tell you to do something. You don't have to wait for permission. You can just do it. And in doing so, you can create change in your own neighborhood. So that's really what the book is about, and as well, what kind of prompted me to write it.
Okay. So let me ask you this. How long has the book been on the market?
So it launched June 1st, and the Kindle version launched June 1st, and it did go number one. I was like, yay. It took a screenshot.
Yay. Congratulations.
Thank you. And then the paperback actually launches September 14th. So, you know, brand new book. This is my first book. And it was definitely, it took me a year to write it. And I want to write another one. I'm excited. I don't know.
Well,
how
listen, let me tell you, you got a lot of material that you can actually use to write another one. And I think you got a lot more to say, because if you keep going to these trainings, I'm pretty sure it's going to ignite some other type emotion in you that's going to prompt you to write out some information that we all need to know, okay?
Yes.
So don't even for a second. Look, as you continue to sit there, just keep writing. Look, start your book in training. You already know.
Okay. But you know what's so funny? I think my next book, if I can get around to it, I got to figure out how to start it out. Now, you're going to trip off of this. So, I think I told you my great-grandmother came to Los Angeles in the 1930s. She had a beauty salon, and I have all her pictures of the salon and everything. But anyway, I was looking at the census data, and she was born in 1898, because I found the 1900 census. She was 2 years old. Her mother's name is Molly Timberlake. And so we know that... We know there's someone else that has the last name Timberlake.
Hey, right now, you got some famous relatives that you don't know about?
Right? And so the other part that's funny
them is... Them Timberlakes, they own slaves. That's what you're trying to tell us.
That's what I'm trying to say. And so listen here. They had always told me my great-grandmother was from Oklahoma. When I looked on that census, she is from Tennessee. And I said to myself, let me see, where is Justin Timberlake from? I said, Alexa, where is Justin Timberlake from? Justin Timberlake is from Tennessee. Justin Timberlake is my cousin. I'm sorry. I'm claiming that.
Girl, you guys, watch this. Listen, I'm going to send this podcast to Justin Timberlake's people. I'm like, you know you got some black relatives, right?
You know his hair real curly. I'm trying to tell you.
Thank you. He got that hair like ours. Look, he's just real light skin. He probably is passing from that family passing.
See?
So that's how we number did it two. Look, you know how we did it back in 1800s. Half was passed and don't even realize. That's why a lot of them don't realize that they black and don't even know they black. Because they great-great-great-grandmama was a passing Negro who married a white man. And just so happened, the baby was light-skinned. And you trying to figure out why your cousin got curly, super curly hair, and see? Your other cousin got straight hair, and one cousin got olive skin. You don't know? It's because we are all mixed up together, okay?
See? I'm telling you.
I believe you when you say Justin Timberlake is your cousin. I'm claiming that for you.
Exactly. I'm like, all I need is a reparation. You can just buy me a house. We even. We could.
You done, look, but here's the slick part with my mouth. You done stole enough of our culture anyway. So you might as well pay it back to your family members, okay?
Yes. So that's book number two. Whenever I get around, I'm going to have to go to Tennessee and probably look through some records and, you know, try to dig and figure out what's what. But I'm pretty sure. I mean, come on, Timberlake.
Girl, that's when you're going to be like, the day I found out I was just as
Timberlake. I'm going to go to the house. Hey, cousin.
And he going to write one that say, the day I found out I was black.
Man, oh man,
that's the one that's gonna strike a nerve with
everybody. They're gonna be like, what? Like, meanwhile, we're gonna be like, we knew it
already. He sang and danced like us already.
Oh,
but girl, so we're okay. In your book, what are some of the things that you talk to us about that we, like, I'm going to go pick this book up. And you guys, I told Nicole, even before I interviewed her, how disappointed I was that I couldn't get the book prior to interviewing her. So I'm going to go get out of here. I'm going to go get this book. And I'm going to read your book. But I want you to tell us, because... Now, I'm going to do Nicole like I do all my guests. I'm gonna go get your book, then I'm gonna put you on blast and have you teach a class based off your book in my 10 Dimensions of Wellness group.
Yes. I'm down for that. I am down for that.
Yeah, because here's the thing. I know there's some tips and things in the book that you're giving out to us. So what is there in the book that we need? Because when I get this book, I talk too much. So I'll probably be reading the book live on Facebook, especially if it's something in there that's going to really touch my spirit. Because that's just how I am. Like, I've been a picture of the page that is on, posted it on Facebook, highlighted it, made a circle of it, then do a live audio recording reading it, because you know, some people don't read, they listen. So, so what's in the book, Nicole? Tell us.
And right quick before I get into that, why one of my friends, I was talking to her about my book, and she said, I love listening to your book. And I was like, listening to my book? I don't have an audio book. It's only on Kindle or paperback. She said, girl, Alexa will read a book. If you have a book in Kindle, you have Alexa, she will read the book to you. I said, are you serious? I did not know Alexa could read. The child can, she can read.
Alexa be reading the people now.
Yes. She said she be reading the book to me. I said, oh, listen, wow.
Now you finna put me on a whole new level lazy.
See?
I'm about to be in my bed. Tomorrow, Alexa, read this.
she gonna read it to you.
Alexa, pull up the Herbalism Encyclopedia in my Kindle. And can you read that to me tonight as I go to sleep? Because I need that. I need to memorize some of these things in a deep thought. Thank you for that tidbit of information.
Try it out. I mean, she was like, yeah. I was like, wow, no idea. That blew my mind. I was like, okay. But as far as what's in my book, so there are, I kind of go through my life from the time I was a child. We talk about the body positivity stuff. I talk about relationships. You know, someone like me, I'm the smart kid, always been the smart kid, go to school, follow rules, follow instructions, but I had a hard time with these men. I don't know. And so I talk about that struggle and how I got out of that and taught myself to do better and choose better for myself and have higher expectations. I talk about some of the observations, again, in my work in public health. For example, again, saying things like, how come when I'm in my neighborhood, I see liquor stores all up and down the block, but when I'm working in Malibu on the west side, I don't see any liquor stores. So those kinds of observations and what they need, I talk a lot about those. And then I think the last one I really focus on is this idea of we need to do a better job collectively of understanding different points of view and trying to find a space where we can all kind of come together. Like, you might like chocolate ice cream and I might like vanilla, but can we come to a middle ground about this very important thing? How do we move forward with that? I think we've become such a either yes or no type of country where nobody's having conversations about how do we move forward. And so some of that is in the book. And then the last thing I talk about is how to build community. Again, this idea of you don't have to be a celebrity and have millions of dollars. You can be a chef. You can be a person that's good at math. How can you help others where you are, where you stand, to build and do better in your own neighborhoods? And so one example I give is the pop-up shops I do in my backyard. Well, this was all pre-COVID, right? This was before COVID, but literally wanting to support Black women business owners. And opening my backyard up and having pop-up shops and letting them set their stuff up and kind of inviting the community to come in. And that's just one way of me trying to give back to my neighborhood. It didn't require $1 million investment. It doesn't require me buying property or doing something major. That's a small thing, but it had impact. The vendors I still talk to, they come by and, hey, when are we going to do this again?
Okay, now we are going to wrap up our interview with Nicole Vick, and she was just telling us about her book, Pushing Through. But Nicole is going to tell us where you can find the book, how you can get in touch with her, and where you can ask her questions.
So my book is available on Amazon.
You can do a search, pushing through, finding the light in every lesson, or you can just type my name. The book will pop right up. It's also on barnesandnoble.com. And if you want to reach out to me, you can find me on my website, www.NicoleDVick.com. You can find me on Instagram at NicoleDVick as well. I'm on LinkedIn, Nicole D. Vick. So everything is Nicole D. Vick.
Yeah.
You can find me there. And I even have a Facebook page now. I'm shifting it away from primarily my fashion, sort of fashionista life, into more of the general brand. So I do have a Facebook business page, Nicole D. Vick.
Okay. So all of the information that Nicole just gave you, you can actually find on our website as well, because, you know, just like all of our guests, we also write an article based on her and put all of her contact information on there as well. Now, Nicole, we're going to move into our question segment. My first question for you is, what's been the biggest surprise you've had in these last few months?
This whole idea of working from home has been such a surprise for me, because, you know, I work in an environment where it's kind of not, there are options for working from home, but they don't really want you to work from home. But then now when we had to work from home, I'm like, I could have been working from home the whole time. And so that's been actually very interesting, right? And then the weird part, now that I've been doing it since March, I actually do now realize the importance of working at work and not having work be at home. Like, it's been a little bit of a struggle, but that definitely was a surprise, where it was something that we thought was impossible, all of a sudden was possible, and it was really a kind of a cool thing. Like, I literally have been working from home since March, around March, end of March, early April. That was a huge surprise for me.
Yeah, we've all had to adjust to that, even the kids. Now, let me ask you this. What do you wish you had known 10 years ago that you know now?
Wow. That everything would be okay in the end. That, you know, the struggles and stuff that I was going through with my self-image, my weight, all of that, my raising my daughter, all of those struggles, that ultimately at the end of the day, it would all work out, especially if I did the work on myself and, you know, kind of put my best foot forward, that everything would work out. It would be fine.
Okay. What inspires you and make you feel like your best self?
Wow. My daughter.
My daughter is 23 years old now. I had her I was 18 years old. She was born 8 weeks early, weighed 3 pounds, 11 ounces. She's 23 years old and is the biggest inspiration ever. And it's like, it's amazing. She still likes to hang out with me, maybe because I pay for everything.
But we have the best time. We have an IGTV show. So if you go to my Instagram page, you'll see her and I on there cutting up and having a good time talking about important topics. And I love hearing her perspective. You know, that 23-year-old perspective is different than, you know, the 42-year-old. You know, I'm like, what? So I love it. I love hanging out with her and learning from her.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to have to check that out. Now, yes. If you could have a billboard with anything on it, what would it say and why?
Wow, it would say, nothing beats a failure but a try. That is my, like, I say that all the time, and I really think that it is so true, that, you know, you can second guess yourself, doubt yourself, but you know what? You always have to at least try. And every obstacle that has come to me in my life, from jobs, not being sure I qualify for a promotion, to any other thing, it's like, I have to at least try. And so that's kind of, I think that's what my billboard would say.
Oh, very cool. I actually like that one.
Yes.
So you guys, We want to thank Nicole Vick for being on our show. And as always with all of our guests, this will not be the last time that you hear from her. We will have her back on again. And also, don't forget to join our group on Facebook, 10 Dimensions of Wellness, for after the podcast. A lot of our guests, we do have them teaching classes and sharing information in that group. Nicole, once again, we just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you for being on the show tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a great time. I enjoyed our conversation so much.
Awesome. So if you want to listen to the 10 Dimensions of Wellness, you can always hear our show on Spotify, on Apple Music, on Pandora, iHeartRadio, Google, and so many other audio platforms. Or you can simply subscribe to our YouTube page, NRI Wellness, where we post our podcast each week. Our show runs every Wednesday and every Friday. So listen in, download, and subscribe. And again, you guys, thank you so much for listening to another episode of the 10 Dimensions of Wellness. This has been your host, Cami Red, and have a great night.
Did you know that the average person carries around 5 to 20 pounds of fecal matter in their intestines, depending on their diet? Some people are walking around feeling sluggish, constipated, unable to lose weight, skin issues, and allergies, all because of the toxins that are in their intestines. Listen, life gives us enough battles to fight. Your health shouldn't be one of those. If you change your mindset on how you actually view food, you will never have to worry about your health or weight again. I'm Ashley, owner of She Loves Wellness. I help people transition into a healthy lifestyle. I offer tips, recipe, and supplement kits to jumpstart your lifestyle change. Visit me on Facebook and IG at She Loves Wellness for your product information and samples. Don't forget, it's not a diet, it's a lifestyle change.
NRI Wellness brings you the latest health and nutrition information, creates customized nutrition programs, and walks you through the process to ensure your success.